I think more and more that's where people are turning rather than your corporate media, because they totally let us down during this election cycle.
We've been speaking with Sue Udry. She's executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and Defending Dissent Foundation. You can find them online at bordc.org. Sue Udry, thank you very much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks so much, Janine.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. For more information, you can check out our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. KBOO Community Radio is in this year's Willamette Weekly Give Guide for the second year in a row. Give to KBOO and Give Guide today and help us highlight the impact community radio has throughout the Willamette Valley. All new and increased contributions will be matched one-to-one by the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. You also get Chinook book discounts and free items in your email inbox immediately following your gift, along with your donation receipt. Give Guide is an easy, secure way to make a gift to KBOO, so go to kboo.fm and click on the banner on the top of the screen.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor, Plaid Tidings. Produced by Enlightened Theatrics, the play runs from November 23rd to December 11th at Salem's Historic Grand Theater. Enlightened Theatrics provides professional musical theater experiences and theatrical education. Plaid Tidings is a special holiday edition of Forever Plaid, a musical homage to the Close Harmony guy groups that reached the height of their popularity during the 1950s. Again, that's Plaid Tidings, produced by Enlightened Theatrics from November 23rd to December 11th at Salem's Historic Grand Theater, 191 High Street, Northeast in Salem. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Fix-It Fair on Saturday, November 19th at 9 a.m. at Ron Russell Middle School in Portland. The Portland Fix-It Fair features exhibits and workshops from numerous community partners talking about issues such as water and energy savings, home and personal health, food and nutrition, community resources, recycling, and more. Childcare and lunch will be provided. Again, that's the Portland Fix-It Fair, Saturday, November 19th, from 9 a.m. to noon at Ron Russell Middle School, 3955 Southeast 112th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. I'm your host tonight, Cheryl Green, and thank you so much to tonight's engineer, Adam. I interviewed Leslie Gregory from Right to Health for my podcast back in June, and we talk about the public health threat that racist systems create. And while that's nothing new, it seems extra important to talk about this right now and about getting involved in anti-racism work. Leslie Gregory is a primary care provider and founder and president of a local nonprofit called Right to Health. I sat down with her recently to talk about healthcare, advocacy, education, and direct action around treating racism as the true public health threat that it is. As a Black woman and daughter of civil rights activists, her father a firefighter and her mother a nurse, Leslie focuses her work on serving people of color and poor people. We started out our conversation jumping right into the topic of an open letter she wrote to the CDC in 2015. Her letter was clear and simple. Centers for Disease Control declare racism a public health threat. In their mission statement, they say, quote, "As the nation's health protection agency, CDC saves lives and protects people from health threats," end quote. Okay, get to work, folks. Today's music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I read your open letter a couple times, and I read the response, too. You said, this is what you, the CDC, need to do. And they said, oh, well, thank you so much. Here's what we are doing. Don't worry. But they didn't address what you said, which is you need to make the declaration.
The part that was so interesting for me was, exactly like you said, we got this. Here's what we're doing. And then if you have any other suggestions, I felt a bit demeaned to have the premier health authority in this country tell me, no, we're not going to do our job, but thanks for playing.
And would you do a little free labor for us while you're at it?
Right? Mm-hmm. It felt very patriarchal. Number one, that's just the first event. And you don't know me well, but patriarchal does not go well with me.
I believe it.
I'm not real down with that.
Yeah.
But I think the second part that really kind of frustrated me, and I now look back realizing that it's genius to never really come right out and say, here's what you people have wrong with you. But it's so much easier to focus on those poor Black people, as if to say minority health disparities, which is a very abdicating sort of phrase, rather than to focus on the underlying issue. Okay, so I got an original letter, it looks like was actually written individually. But now when all the people that I have in my campaign have been sending off their letters, they're getting this same form letter referring me to this individual. So I called the individual, and while we were speaking, there was no real cogent response, but it was, hold on a minute, I'm going to go ask. And it was, you know, right back to the individual, and no, we're not going to do that. So I felt like, gosh, what would it feel like for me to not have to do my job? Cool. I'm a primary care provider, and this is the primary care provider for the nation. If I decided, oh, you've got diabetes, I'm going to put a Band-Aid on your peripheral neuropathy, and we're not going to talk about your glucose. If I did that, what would happen? I'd be fired.
Yes, you would.
Yeah. Big change needs to happen. Big change. When public health crises are actually declared and we see the change that occurs, for me, what this says is we don't want change. Maybe this is why we have the most expensive healthcare budget in the world, and yet our people just aren't all that healthy. Yeah, that's a lot of money we're paying people to not do their job. I want that job.
Yeah. Sounds relaxing.
Is that awful of me? Yeah, it feels awful of me to want that job. There are a lot of people in public health that I just want to ask them, how is this not a perfect precise and exquisite example of the institutional racism that everybody seems to now be admitting is behind this. How is this not a perfect example?
What does the CDC have to lose if they do declare racism a public health crisis?
I think number one, face. Maybe that's the one. I don't know. One would think all that we have to gain would override even loss of face.
Healthy people.
Which is another really interesting piece, because in the response, we got this whole healthy people 2020. You know, we've got this great plan. And I'm thinking, okay, it's 2016. You got 4 years. I don't see it.
And they said there's, as you know, there's a lack of research. So how are you going to implement this plan in 4 years when you don't have research to back it up?
Right. Right. Well, and so that brings up another really interesting point for me, because there is research.
Yes, there is.
So when HIV was discovered, would one have ever responded? Well, we just don't have evidence based. So we're going to go ahead and let this spread all around the nation. Your job, if you would just look at your mission statement, is to develop. Not just wait for somebody else to develop and then join the bandwagon. No, to develop. You know, CDC, you're the vanguard. We know from all the data that racism is in fact transmissible. It's intergenerational. When we're looking at racism itself, not minority health disparities in quotes, because I'm real tired of that. But if we look at actual racism, which we all know now is the underlying cause of these health disparities, if we look at that as a disease state, not only does it meet all four criteria, but the benefits of studying it as a disease state would give us so much information into the psychopathology and pathophysiology of perpetration. Think about all the different types of hate we might learn about, as well as what I personally believe is racism is a particular strain of paranoia. What if we looked at it as a disease state itself, racism itself? I don't mean as a mental health disorder.
Right.
It's not a mental health disorder. It does lead to disordered behavior. It is also a thought error. There's a difference between a mental health disorder and a thought error, which then causes aberrant or pathological behavior.
When I was at this public health conference at Emory a couple weeks ago, you know, right on the doorstep of the CDC.
Right.
Dr. Abigail Sewell talked about some of the research that she has done on the consequences of stop and frisk and stop, question, and frisk.
Oh.
And her research has found that where there is a high level of stop and frisk,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the health disparities hit the entire neighborhood, including white people.
Interesting.
Who get stopped and frisked less, but they are still facing the mental health struggles and the fear and the stress-based illnesses, and it's on an entire neighborhood basis.
There's somebody gaining. It's about the money. So perfect example. It hasn't been too long ago that CDC actually was given a mandate to study gun violence. Funding was pulled.
I remember.
Uh-huh. Follow the money.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I'm not speaking as a black person. I'm speaking as an American citizen. We're not being cared for when the premier health authorities, and I'm not just talking about CDC, I'm talking about NIH. You know, I sent a letter to them too, right? Yeah, same crap. If these are the individuals whose responsibility it is to keep us healthy, and they can choose which pathologies they want to pursue, then how safe and how healthy are we? And particularly as the media is continuing to flash, you know, people of color suffering trauma at the hands of the institutions, again, that are supposed to be protecting them. I was sitting on a plane coming back from Ohio, and I was sitting next to a psychiatrist, practicing psychiatrist at one of the larger medical institutions here in Portland. And he was admitting to me that he's seen an increase in anxiety disorder. And I said, well, gee, you know, what do you think that is? And he said, well, you know, I'm going to be frank with you. I've got patients who've admitted to me, frankly and right out, it is anxiety over the darkening of America. and I'm just going to assume these were not black patients here, just going out on a limb. I think that it's very common. And I think a lot of it has to do with loss of privilege. I'm thrilled that he's had patients who've admitted it. But I have to say, I suspect it's like roaches. You see one, there's a lot. Not all patients are going to be there to identify the source of this anxiety enough to say it. Yeah. But something's wrong. And that something's wrong is a very discomforting situation, you know? And if you don't recognize your privilege to begin with, how are you ever going to recognize that the loss of it is causing these symptoms? And now we have all these guns with all these people who are kind of borderline paranoid. At the end of the day, as a medical practitioner, my job is to find the answer. Let's take a look at it. If you can write to me in a letter and say, yes, racism contributes disproportionately to health disparities, then how come you don't have to focus on the racism? You just get to look at the disparity. You know, I lost my dad to heart disease.
Young.
Very young. I watched the stress that he was under doing a really tough job in really tough circumstances with people who made terrible comments and remarks to him. He was a brilliant man, very eclectic, you know, very involved and curious and intellectually rigorous. I truly believe that if he'd survived, he would have a great deal to contribute to the world. I don't want anybody else to lose their dad to heart disease. And that's what started my medical career. But in finding stress and the heart, and that's where I kind of started my studies, I began to realize that one of the biggest stressors in this world is hate. Because I saw it. Kill him. I swore. At the time, it was just stress and the heart. But what I've begun to see is one of the biggest stressors in our world. Two of the biggest. Hate and fear. When you look at incidents of heart disease in this country, people of color can be at 3 and 4 times the risk. And yet, here I'm practicing in a medical system where the premier standard of care for heart disease management for years based on Framingham, the big, huge Boston-based intergenerational tens of thousands of patients. And even today, it is one of the premier studies on which we base heart disease management. How many people of color do you think were in that study?
I'm going to guess 0.
Yeah. At what point does Framingham say, well, gee, let's go ahead and get some people of color in this study so we can be more culturally competent? You know, it's a big engine. If you look at the United States, like a huge ship, okay? I was in the Navy, so I do this stuff all the time. But it's a big ship. We know that big ships don't turn quickly, okay? What I'm saying is, I don't expect you to turn on a dime, okay? This is an aircraft carrier. It's not a dinghy. I'm not expecting a whip around. Ready? Coming about. No. I fully acknowledge this is going to take time. All I said was, let's declare it, okay? I'm not expecting, you know, 40 acres and a mule back to every person of color in this country. No. I'm saying the threat to public health, not minority health, public health, is such that your own 4 criteria have been met by it. If we wanted people at the top to sit there and go, oh, no, I don't think I'm going to do my job today, then why would we have the criteria? What it feels like to me is that there's some rich fat cat somewhere counting big ducats on the back of these people who are dying. Okay? Here's the other piece. It's not just black people who are suffering under this. If it were, it would still be a big problem. It would still be worth all that attention. It would still meet the criteria. But it's not. One of the criteria are that it's disproportionately affecting. But that doesn't mean white people are excluded from the damage. I see white people suffering behind this. You know, I have friends who are made physically ill by watching the damage, the violence against unarmed black people. Here's a wild idea. What if CDC actually did their job? We declared it racism a public health threat. We devised a way to tell people, you know, if you teach your children this, it's abuse. Okay? Because back in the day, everybody told us, oh, be patient. In the 60s, they were saying, oh, just wait, the old guard will die out. And these old ideas will die with them. And we were hopeful. I remember. And you know what happened? They taught their children. And it wasn't to use the N-word. It wasn't to spit on or cross the street or clutch your children close to you in an elevator. It wasn't any of those overt things. It was just, we're going to move. It was just, oh, you don't want to have that seat. And so we have generations of children now, later, after all these changes, civil rights is all over. We're post-racial. Yeah. And they're afraid. I don't want children to be afraid to sit next to my child, to open the door to my child with her cookies or trick-or-treating. And the fear, however unrealistic, however unfounded, is fear. And that's not healthy. You know, it hurts people. I saw an analogy the other day and I thought it was brilliant. You know, there are three people of very different heights over a fence, right? To see the game. Equality is everybody gets a box the same height, and still you have people who can't see. What I like is equity, where the shorter person gets the bigger box and everybody gets to look over. It's a very subtle but tremendously powerful point. And I think that's what I'm saying to CDC. You have special allowances for the disabled. I think that's brilliant. But what ADA did was a brilliant analogy again to what all I'm asking. Once you did that and you made accommodations for the disabled, what happened? Okay, it wasn't just the disabled that benefited. And that's what I'm saying here. So you put ramps on the curbs. How cool is that for parents with strollers? So you lower the water fountain. So look, little kids can stay more hydrated. How awesome is that? The first step to doing this work, just stop talking about it like it's over there. But the second part is to end the blame, end the shame. If America wants to be the vanguard it once was, remember the old, we're the greatest nation on the planet? Let's lead in this way. We're not the only racist country. Instead of being the global exporter of weaponry, you know, how about we teach peace? Here's an idea. The other thing is, some of the mass murderers we're seeing, some of them we know have actually come from racist families. Some of them, absolutely, we know they were indoctrinated with, you know, a lot of xenophobia and stuff, which led them to this behavior. What if, in studying racism, we find the psychopathology of perpetration? We can use this information in many different ways. You know, we've let down people of color in this country. We've really written a big old check, and it's bouncing all over the place. I had a brilliant friend of mine once quote the amount, and of course I can't remember it right now, but it had to have been over $1 million per year per child in social services that are going to be required, incarceration. We have so many people in jail now, and they're not voting, they're not producing, they're not supporting their children. Think of the money we would save just on that alone. And quite frankly, I think a part of the declaration of racism would be to drive funding into the Innocence Project, because we have so many falsely accused, unjustly incarcerated. We have a lot of money being made on racism, and that's why these people don't want to do their job. The prison industrial complex is a perfect example, and we have evidence-based practices on how to recover from some of these trauma events. We know how to help people who've been victims of racist violence. We've got healing going on all over this country. But when you come to me and say, we're not going to declare it a public health threat, but anything else you'd like to suggest, please do. I'm going to tell you no. Every single thing that people of color have tried to bring the light to this issue, to heal, to fix it, every single thing has been co-opted by white culture. Okay, you want one example? Okay, all lives matter. I'm saying no, I'm not sharing any trauma recovery strategies. I'm not sharing anything. And I've got it because we got lots of people doing this work. And ever since that letter came out, I've got people coming out of the woodwork going, really? Because I've been saying, you know, lots of information, lots of people coming. And I found amazing genius individuals of true and deep and warm and wonderful heart doing this work for decades. Healers, clerics, counselors, you know, social activists who've given up their personal lives for this work. It's just not okay anymore to ignore that contribution. CDC, you do your job, I'm happy to share. But until you do, whatever we try is going to be co-opted by dominant culture. So I'm not going to play. And what I'd really like to do is sit down and talk to these individuals. But you know what? I'm working.
Right.
I'm trying to support my family. How is this not deliberate undermining of an entire class?
Mm-hmm.
Of how is this not? You know, my mom's been fighting this fight for 50 years. She doesn't have a long time. I would like to see her work bear some fruit before she's gone so that I can show her that you labored for good reason. You know, we've seen some change, even if we've moved the boulder just a couple of feet. Okay, but I'm not tolerating it rolling back. That's one thing. I'm not having that. She devoted her life to this. Yeah, on the one hand, I feel a great deal of urgency about it. Like, now! It's been 400 years! Now! You know, and on the other hand, like I said, you know, I'm old salty dog. I know that an aircraft carrier does not turn on a dime. I'm willing to work with it. Okay? But I got to see some turning here. This is something else I thought was such an exquisite analogy with HIV is that initially when they discovered the virus and that people were dying, what was everybody's knee-jerk response? Well, I'm not gay. I'm not promiscuous, so I don't have to worry about it. I'm not, and my lover's not. You know, I don't have to worry about it because my partner's not. Once CDC made that declaration and we opened the whole thing up, what happened? Well, it was no longer about the individual. It was about exposure. Okay, you don't have to be gay. You don't have to be promiscuous, right? And so what happened was even people who were not gay, not promiscuous, you know, never traveled abroad, never did, were being tested, right? It's about being tested. We even allowed testing in the privacy of your own home. You know what? They're out there. Plain old implicit bias quizzes. You can take it at home. You don't have to out yourself. And don't get me wrong, I love the idea of the autonomy of the individual. You can do anything. You can be anything if you just work hard enough. I love that promise of America. It's wonderful. But at the end of the day, we depend on each other. We're humans. We're connected. And so you can walk around feeling like, you know, oh, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. I'm cool. Well, but you hired somebody to make the shoes. I think that's the other piece that's so disappointing about all this is that our premier healthcare provider, both of them for our nation, is failing to acknowledge that simple idea, which is a healthy community is interdependent.
And it comes back to like what you were saying in the beginning, minority health disparities, mm-hmm. putting it on you.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You're a minority and you are experiencing this health problem. No, that's not really the direction it was going.
Exactly.
It's coming from the other direction.
Yeah. It is a no-brainer
yeah.
for those of us standing in it. It just amazes me that you can sit in the middle of a boiling pot of water and seeing people scalded all around you and can say, here I am in my little ice cube and I just don't care. And that's what it feels like to me. You're sitting over there on your little ice cube. I'm over here scalded to death. And you can say, well, here's what we'll do. You know,
I don't think it's that hot.
Yeah, it's not that warm over here. We're good. I know it's not a pleasant topic. I've had it brought up to my attention several times.
That it's too unpleasant to
yes,
talk about?
Nobody wants to talk about that.
Well, for every white person who's uncomfortable with this, it's more uncomfortable to be the subject of racism than it is yeah. to have to talk about it. So I kind of don't care if somebody feels like it's too uncomfortable. Now, if you're traumatized
yeah.
directly by the conversation, that's one thing.
Yeah. One of the things I've asked people to do is, you know, yes, this is another talk about racism. Raise your hand if you're feeling uncomfortable. Not one person would raise their hand.
Okay.
I'd say, okay, it's okay. You don't have to admit it. I'm not trying to out you. If you are uncomfortable in this moment, do me a favor. Just this once, look at yourself and realize your first impulse is to say, I'm uncomfortable. I'm stopping right now. Just for an academic exercise, don't do that. Just sit here. You're safe. Nobody's going to stand up and go, you're a racist. You know, just sit here in your own quiet mind. You know, close your eyes, turn and face that discomfiture. I promise. Blood pressure ain't going to go up. You'll be all right. Look inside yourself. What is it that's making you uncomfortable right now? Is it that someone has called you a racist? Or is it, in fact, the possibility that you could be? While you're sitting there, just thinking about it, just feeling what it feels, this something ain't right, okay, that you're feeling in this moment, take a deep breath, go inside. Where is it in your body that you're feeling it? Are you having a headache? You're grinding your teeth? You feel your gut tighten up? You got your neck tight? What does it feel like to feel uncomfortable in the moment that you might be a racist? If you have a body symptom, go there. Go into it.
Yeah.
It's okay. I promise. You'll be okay. You know, every once in a while, I'll have a person come to me after the conversation. It won't be in the middle of everybody because we're not raising our hand. We're not going to talk about this. But after it's all over, I'll have people come over to me and say, you know, at first, something just wasn't right. I couldn't identify any place in my body where the problem was. But as I was sitting there for a while, I started to feel like there was something, you know, a little stitch over here in the right, a little tension back in my lumbar spine. You know, I just couldn't quite relax my shoulders. It was just something wasn't right, you know? And I was like, brilliant. That's all you were supposed to do. Now, just pretend that you can never escape that. Pretend that you can never not feel like something's just not right. That you go to sleep at night, something's not right. You wake up in the morning, something's not right. Driving down the street, something's not right. You go to work, you go to school, you shop, you got your life, everything going on. Even in your most private, intimate moments with your lover, something's not right. Now, just imagine what it would feel like that all the time. From cradle to grave. Whatever you're doing, something's just not right. All the time. Do you think that would shorten your life? That's all I'm asking. If you think it would shorten your life, you just might be an anti-racist because you don't like it.
If you're just tuning in, this is Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, your community radio station. I'm your host, Cheryl, and you've been listening to my conversation with Leslie Gregory of Right to Health. The music you're hearing tonight is Denzel Sprack from Blue Dot Sessions.
You can't go back. You can't go back now that you know. If it's okay for you that some people experience that on a daily basis, every day, all day, cradle to grave. No fault of their own. Just came out that way. Then you've got a problem. And it's not religion you need. It's a heart. It's humanity that you're lacking. All I'm asking you is give that up, get your humanity back, and see what you can contribute to the world in a positive way. Because it's your world, and it's your humanity, and there's only one race, and that's sapiens. Homo freaking sapiens. But when you look in the mirror, and it's okay with you, for an entire segment of your citizenry to feel that way. Something's wrong here. It's not fair. And the only thing you have left when you're not heard, you're not seen, your vote doesn't count, you don't have any other choice, that's the violence. What we're seeing now is white people are having some of these problems. Mortality rates are going up for white people. And I think this is a part of it. Part of it is it's also the fact that they're being subjected to the same kind of economic hardship that people of color have for a long time. And so we're seeing some of that too, to be fair. And quite frankly, I think racism is a tool of the greedy. You know, that's another reason why people are kind of coming to a little more awareness. Now that we've got that awareness, please let me help you with some action steps, because just sitting in your anger and rage, just sitting in your fear and hate, just sitting keeps that cortisol level just kind of always there. It will shorten your life. I may just be somebody's primary care or patients call me doc. And I'm just maybe somebody's plain old simple doc. And I just may be able to only help one person at a time. But that's why it seems like it needs to be CDC doing their job. You're our doc, CDC. You're our primary care. And all I'm asking you is what my patients ask me. What can I do to fix this? I do a lot of management of lifestyle diseases like diabetes. And, you know, I could put a patient on all the diabetic medication in the world. But if I don't do the simple first step of looking at what are you eating, bring me a food log first. Hello? I have to do this for my job. All I'm saying is, CDC, do yours. I will do nothing else until this is done. You know, there are really good things to do to help people with racist trauma. Some of these healing circles and talking circles are amazing. I actually spoke with someone on the phone the other day who had been harmed tremendously, years of incarceration, wrongly, and actually had one of the people who perpetrated against him, who caused him to be incarcerated, came back and just said, you know what, I'm sorry. And it was transformational for that person. He heard the sorry. He heard it. He felt it. He believed it. And I believed it. And it made a tremendous difference for him. He didn't go back saying, okay, I need you to pay me reparations. Although they would have certainly been justified. Let me tell you something, that was years off that man's life. But he didn't do that. It took a few. He sat there, he stewed in it for a few minutes. You know what I mean? I could see them working with him. I could see it. He was working on it inside. He was gnawing on it, like that song. But he said, I forgive you. And I thought to myself, you a bigger man than me. Yeah. You know what I mean? But he did. You know, you could see the change in the posture of both of them. It was a palpable change. And so for me, yeah, I think the first thing we need to do is just declare it. Whoops, my bad, made a mistake. Let's declare it. And quite frankly, it needs to be CDC because we've already got it from House of Rep. You know, the House of Representatives already apologized for slavery. I don't know if anybody heard about it. I sure didn't hear about it, but someone told me that. And I looked it up. I think it was 2008. But you heard nothing, did you?
Mm-mm, yeah. I didn't know about it.
Yeah, but they did. Look it up. House of Representatives. They issued a formal apology for slavery and Jim Crow. It's accepting culpability. We made this mistake, okay? And as a result of that mistake, we now have racism killing people of color and harming white people, harming all people. Is it really so much to think that now our premier healthcare provider would say, look at the apology, look at the damage it's done, and say, okay, that's a public health threat. Let's just focus, people. Focus. Just want people to focus. So, and we're just going to, you know, we're going to issue a real apology in the way of a declaration saying, you know what, this was a thought error. It has had intergenerational and wide-reaching ramifications. We seek to reverse just by making this declaration. And then once that happens, the dominoes fall into place, right? We're going to look at it like a virus. We're going to study its transmission, the different strains, the different ways it expresses, regional differences, which we know there are, okay? And we're going to empower the people who've been working on the front lines of this forever. We're going to listen to them. And we're going to ask humbly for their leadership in this regard. Okay? And we're going to start looking at ways we can build up the people who've been violated by this. Just like we have. A lot of the AIDS patients now are doing tremendous work in groups together. Okay, that's my point. We have healing protocols. We have amazing workers on the front lines doing this work at the cost of their own lives. We hold up Dr. King as this icon in our white people, black people alike, all love. Do you know when he was shot? He was 39 years old. 39! At autopsy, his heart was 60. And yet the premier study managing heart disease in this country had not one black participant at all. How is this so? Okay, it wasn't okay to lie about gay and AIDS. Why is it okay? Why is it okay? I'm telling you, racism has a higher mortality rate just because it's lasted so long. If it's okay not to address this incredible waste of human life, then what is okay? It kind of makes a person want to go to Atlanta.
Knock, knock.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Hello.
How can people get involved and engaged with what you're doing and supportive of it?
What would be great would be to have 30 people pledge to write a letter every month, once a month. So if 30 people do that, that's every day they'll get a letter. Some people may not be in a position to do more than that. I would just request if we could get 30 people who will pledge to write a letter once a month. But for me, you know what? I saw their true colors. I think what we need to do is we need to actually demand a response from the White House, the Congress, and actually get a movement started. We've been in contact with Black Lives Matter, and we have started to hear them change to Black Health Matters, which I believe is at least as powerful a message. Because for me, it's not enough that we survive. It's not enough to just have you stop killing us. Yes, that's a big message. Do stop killing us, please. But I think we need to go further than that. I would ask for people to get in touch with me. We have positions open throughout the organization for instance, a bibliographer. We have a lot of great literature out there. I would like to be able to put it out on the website, the Facebook page, the Twitter, so that people can start reading some of this tremendous literature. For instance, Ta-Nehisi Coates and his brilliant writing. The other part is I want us to start taking care of ourselves. Okay, if you're a person of color, you know you're at higher risk. Act like it. You know, what's called traditional Southern food or traditional Black food is not our traditional food, so stop eating it. Read Soul Food Junkies and find something healthy. Byron Hurd is a brilliant filmmaker. And this is a wonderful, wonderful piece of work that you can look at and go, you know what? I'm not going to eat like that anymore. Survive. That's what I would say. How can you participate in this movement? Survive. You know, stop eating crap and start pooling your resources. Let's get together on this. And please, again, no shame. We have been deliberately driven apart. So don't feel bad if you don't have a good community and with support, because this is not an accident. If you can't all go to the grocery store with the good food in the other neighborhood, pool your resources, somebody with a car, drive over and get a whole bunch and split it up. Start eating healthier food. Educate yourself about what a healthy diet is. And instead of clinging to this, I want to have my traditional food, realize your traditions have been taken from you. But the other piece is, get into my campaign and contact me so that we can start to delegate the kinds of things that you can do. How do you want to participate? Do you. Okay, if you're a seamstress, then you get together with your seamstress group and you're going to sew something, sew a quilt for Black Lives Matter. If you're a religious person, get people together in your church and say, hey, how about if we share the pulpit every other Sunday with a group of color? Have you ever heard a preacher from another group? If you're a Lions Club member, look for another Lions Club that may have more people of color in it to come to work with you. If you're a Rotary or a American Legion post, or, you know, these are places where you can start. Okay. The other piece is to educate yourself. Read. One great book is Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. It can teach you a great deal about where it came from and how you were given the wrong pill. Okay, you're living in the matrix, people. Read and get out of it. Open your eyes and find someone who is different. Invite them into your life and lower your own barriers first. Then, once you've done that, you may find your voice. I mean, I've been amazed at how people get when they get together. And what I'm saying is, these conversations can happen. We've got some brilliant facilitator trainers who are doing the work and know how to talk about these things. Actually engage with people who have done this mediation training. Look at your local area. There may be an anti-racist group that is actually working in this. We have Resolutions Northwest here. We had the Uniting to Understand Racism Dialogues here. And learn how to manage your trauma while you're doing it. You know, you can get real triggered doing this work. It's heavy. So if you're going to do this work, do your inner work first. Because if you come to this with this sort of, gee, I'd like to wave the flag for unity, you know, it ain't going to be kumbaya, honey. So check yourself before you wreck yourself. And so understand why you want to do it. Look inside. Because, you know, if it's so that you can say, oh, I'm waving my banner, then hold off. Go ahead and do that inner work some more, because it may not be helpful. One of the biggest things I would recommend, go on Facebook and like Right to Health, because I've got people coming to that page with questions on an individual basis. You know, this is what happened to me. Could this be racism? My boss did so-and-so with so. What can I do? You know, these are the kinds of things that you can do. Come out of your closet and start talking about this. Realizing all the time that you'll probably make mistakes if you've not been trained. You may want to speak with someone in your peer group or your work group, or, you know, someone to whom you're exposed on a regular basis. You know, I see you ride the bus almost all the time. Would you like to sit here? What a concept. Open up and be more human. So you can get our updates, because we'll have other action steps, things we can do. Follow us on Twitter. I mean, you can do so many things, but make sure before you start to become an activist, in quotes, do your inner work so you don't step on somebody. And so on the one hand, be sensitive to the feelings of others, but come on, let's not be hypersensitive. No, I didn't mean it like that. I'm trying to understand. Be patient with me. Everybody's at a different place on that road to awareness. If I say, you know what, that was an offensive comment, then instead of the knee jerk, which is to say, no, it wasn't. No, I didn't. Whoops. Hold on. Take a deep breath. Understand, we all make mistakes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. How hard is it to say that? You know? Apologize. Humble yourself. Realize you got white privilege. Don't mean you got to use it all the time. And maybe if you're going to use it for change instead of for resisting change. Once racism is declared the public health threat it is, everybody has a role to play. Everybody is involved. Just like HIV, everybody needs to be tested. Everybody needs to use protection. What is protection against racism? Awareness. It may be ugly in here for a while, but the more of us that are out of it, the structure will fall. And imagine what a world it would be if everybody just looked at each individual as another human.
So what you can do is, like you said, wake up and be aware and be interdependent. I mean,
right.
It's something you keep coming back to.
We are. Yeah. We are. Yeah, I would say, number one, admit that, you know, it just might be a racist. And realize that if in fact it's true, it was done to you or it was done in your name. Okay? It's not a personal character assassination, but it is a national shame. And if you'd like to change it, that's fine. But check yourself first. Why do you want to change it? If you want to do it because you find it no longer acceptable that in your name others are being harmed unjustly, then step up. Join the campaign because it is right. It may not be easy, but it is in fact right. Once I had a brilliant white person, but he was not American. He once said to me, it must be very difficult for you to believe in God when you're seeing so much suffering every day. And you know what I realized in that moment? How incredibly empowering and human that felt. You know, he didn't fix anything. But for the very reason that we're human, that in that moment was like, it was like someone took me and all my generations of my family and just wrapped a big old arm around everybody and just hugged my entire line. It was an amazing moment. Just to have somebody say, it must be really hard. I felt like, wow, he gets it. And that's tremendous in the moment. It was tremendous. You know, if you don't know what to do, maybe you're not looking. Maybe there's a part of you that really has something to do, but you're so busy going, I'm not. It's not me. We can't. I won't. I can't, you know, that you're missing it. And we would love to have your participation in the process of changing your world. And there are lots of organizations doing the work that you can contribute to. So if you're a person of privilege, please hit us up because money is something everybody can use. I am trying right now to raise money for another project that my nonprofit is working on to actually help heal the physical damage. And so we can always use contributions. The other issue is I'd love to go to Atlanta to speak in person with these individuals. But quite frankly, I'm working. So I'm raising money for a trip. I'm raising money for a larger action on a national scale for now. But we need to realize that this is an international problem. You know, people of color are being harmed all over the world. If you're privileged enough to have funding, then certainly that would be great. We would love to have a donation so that we can start to put some of our other plans into place, because unfortunately we don't have the coffers of CDC. Acts of civil disobedience are also helpful at putting the point across, but it has to be a very directed message. And if you're going to do something like that, please hit me up first so if you're going to speak for the campaign, let us show you how to speak for us, because, you know, we don't want to have people just doing sort of unorganized civil disobedience and putting themselves in harm's way. Another parallel with HIV, once a virus came out and CDC was resistant, they didn't declare it initially. What happened? First, we had a lot of gay people coming out and doing things. But what really moved it was when heterosexual and white people came out and started acting up with them. Here's the problem. People of color can't do that. We've tried that. And we get hosed and incarcerated, shot, dogs, whatever. So if you really want to engage in an action, it would be safer, I think, for white people to take the foreground on that, because it's safer. Their bodies have more value for some reason. If you get a group of people together who'd like to have an action, I would love to hear from that group. I would be happy to help direct the action. Jane Elliott is brilliant. She's white. So it needs to be white people leading this charge. Because why? Well, white people know how to talk to white people. You need to be speaking to each other. Yep. It is not a black person's problem to solve. However, this individual black person is willing to help. So if you really want to know a change, go ahead, hit me up. Ask me. I'll come speak to your group. You know, contact me at leslie@righttohealthus.org. And the two is a number. You know, if it's a sincere request, we'd love to help. Look around for other people in your community who are having the same questions, struggling with the same issues. Hit me up, because we can help you form a talking group, you know, based on a safe, compassionate, respectful environment. You know, there are a lot of stereotypes that can be explained and dispelled once real information is given. So we do a lot of that. You know, but a lot of it is about care. Just caring for the traumatized and teaching other people not to traumatize. So it takes a certain amount of humility. You know, we don't want to counter hate with hate. You know, that's not the goal. Not at all. Yeah. Yeah. So we really do want to lift ourselves up in the process. We do not want to bring anyone else down. And I think that's a big misconception that caused a lot of fear for people.
Yep.
It's like, you want to take my.
No, you don't.
Yeah. So not.
Yeah.
What about you do I want to take? No. What I care about is the extent to which the ubiquitous racism that we cannot escape is hurting all of us, irrespective of gender, ethnicity, language, ability. It is the broth of what was supposed to be a melting pot. No, it's a stew, and we're good. You know, I'm cool. I don't want to be a potato. You know what I'm saying? I don't want a carrot. I don't want to be a celery. I'll be whatever I am. You can all be whatever you are, whatever. Understanding that the broth is racism. And as soon as we get that, you know, I'm cool. Let's all just simmer down. Simmer down, you know. You know, and I try really hard not to be gender biased, but I feel like to a great extent, it probably should be women kind of leading this fight, because there are babies. I really don't want to sound like this is all about gender bias, but I think women have been dealing with change by our very nature on a regular basis. They're actually. Is a connection between us and our children. You know, sometimes there's a baby crying somewhere. You're focused on what's going on, like the speaker is actually speaking, and then a baby starts crying, and you want to turn and look, and if the mom's having a hard time getting them to calm down, you almost want to go over and grab and go, you know what, this always worked for my kid. That kind of co-parenting is what's needed here. So, and I'm not saying males don't have it, because there are a lot of males who are doing that stuff now, and it's awesome, quite frankly. But as we've been doing it longer, it might be a good strategy for women to kind of carry the banner on this, and for males to just kind of go, hey, what do you need on this? You know, kind of let women take the lead on this. And again, I apologize if it sounds like I'm being gender biased. I think it's just the way we've been conditioned.
Yeah, and we haven't tried it yet, so how about give it a try?
Yeah, and I think also we have a connection to the idea that this is a life. This is somebody's kid that you're hosing, that you're shooting, that you're pulling over for no reason, that's being found dead in a cell. I can't take it anymore. And I would just beg of everyone, please help me with this so I before my mom goes out, so she can see that it's actually led to something more than just the first black president. Thank you very much. Not to in any way demean incredible accomplishments of that man, nor his courage, putting himself and his family in the crosshairs like he has. You know, listen carefully and with an open heart to the suffering of others, and reflect, how would you feel if that voice was your child? So listen like you would to your mom when a person speaks to you about their experience. Listen, believe them. Go to the local NAACP and ask what it would take to get me to come speak to your group, because I'm happy to do it. But we need to make movement, and it needs to start now. And the other thing we're going to do is put together a petition, because once it reaches 100,000, my understanding is that the White House has an obligation to respond. So hit up the Facebook page, Right to Health. It's hard work, but it's so rewarding when it happens.
Yeah.
It's so rewarding. So if you don't like what your nation is doing in your name, stop it.
Yeah.
It's your responsibility as a citizen to stop it. And we can help. We want to help.
You've been listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Thank you so much for listening. Many thanks again to our engineer Adam and our evening public affairs director, Lisa Loving.
This is KBOO Portland.
On November 18th, from 8 p.m.